let's not always assume that things are the same.
Into a discussion before I realized, you know, he was making that assumption and I wasn't, and that was the reason why things were
as opposed to what?
As opposed to being produced on the surface.
What? You mean primitive material? Oh, melted on the surface.
On the surface or inside the
moon? Oh, yeah.
I wonder if we could clear the room as much as possible. We want to get started with the news conference and have an absence of noise just as quickly as possible.
Okay, why don't we start, because we got about 10 minutes to go. The gentleman here on the second row.
This morning, several comments were made about the gas composition, the chemical composition of meteorites in the moon being somewhat similar. I wonder if someone could comment on the possibility of a similar origin for meteorites in the moon that was somewhat different from the Earth, that if we're close to having any kind of data that would even allow this kind of comment on it.
I'll only comment on the question of the gas and refer to noble gases. It happens that for the noble gases, we have some unexplained difference in the isotopic composition of some of the noble gases, in particular neon and xenon between the Earth's atmosphere and meteorites. And it is, of course, very helpful now to know or infer what is this isotopic composition in the Sun. And it is the first evidence, and these measurements are quite difficult, but I will just say how it looks at this moment, is that in the Sun, the neon is different from the Earth, and it is similar to a certain component, at least, in which we have seen in some meteorites. Now then, the argon and krypton is very similar between Earth and Sun, and the xenon is very different again, and that is not understood, what these processes really are. But I believe that if somebody wants to understand the history of the terrestrial atmosphere, he has to explain these differences.
I think the last part of your question was a more general question, and that is, can we say something as to whether or not the meteorites, which are a very varied group of objects, and the Sun and the Moon and perhaps the Earth have a similar origin? I think there's one thing that runs through a lot of the discussion here, which perhaps can be brought out more explicitly here, and that is that the meteorites, particularly the carbonaceous chondrites, have a relative abundance of the elements which is very similar to the relative abundance of the elements that one infers for the Sun from the spectroscopic study of the light coming from the Sun. So that they are our sample of primitive material. If you want to know the relative abundance of the rare earth elements, for example, in the Sun, we go to the carbonaceous chondrites and the other meteorites. Now, there are several strong indications and some weaker indications that indicate that the Moon, let's take the Moon and the meteorites, must have, the carbonaceous chondrites as a specific example, must have rather different compositions for certain specific elements. One of the best examples is the rubidium-strontium ratio, and the reason it's a good example is because we have the strontium isotope composition as an indicator of the relative abundance of these two elements. And this isotopic composition tells us that the meteorites have a ratio of rubidium to strontium of about one rubidium for every three strontium atoms. And in the case of the Moon, the sample that we have, if it's representative of the Moon, tells us that this ratio is less than one rubidium to 10 strontiums. Now, this may seem like a small example and a relatively unimportant pair of elements when you're talking about the whole object, but it's a powerful argument, and the argument can be extended to other elements and is consistent with what you see in other elements, so that the difference in composition that we infer from the Moon and for the chondrites, or particularly the carbonaceous chondrites, indicates that they must have a different origin, or they must have formed under different conditions, particularly different conditions of temperature, but perhaps different conditions of pressure and other physical variables as well.
Just one comment that I'd like to add to that.
Perhaps I don't have to remind you that we have only sampled, we've only scratched the surface of the moon. We have no assurance whatsoever that the composition is the same all the way down. So in the case of most elements, we cannot assert with any certainty from our Apollo 11 results that the moon is different from the Earth or similar to the meteorites or anything else. The strontium-rubidium ratio that Paul mentioned is an exception to this. Here you have a certain amount of leverage and an ability to deduce what has happened down inside of the moon.
Dr. Gast, I'd like to direct this question to you. Do you find a consensus among the people here at this meeting that there was some sort of a major catastrophe on the moon or some sort of a major geological process that happened about 3.5, 3.6 million years ago that could account for the fact that there's no rocks older on the Earth than 3.5 or 3.6 billion years and would account for the difference in ages between the dust and the underlying lunar rock?
I was with you until the last sentence. Yeah, I think that one would like to think, and many people would like to think, that the event that we have dated in Tranquility Base is not a small local intrusion that came out there 3.5 billion years ago and has not much to do with the other history of the moon. One would like to generalize this to a much larger area, and I think we're going to be forced to do this because we're not going to go back to site several hundred kilometers away from Tranquility Base to see whether rocks there are similar in age or different. Whether or not this in any way explains the absence or rarity of rocks on Earth older than 3.5 billion years ago is pure speculation today, and I think we better just leave it at that. It may eventually go to more than that, but this is today just an interesting idea.
I think, Paul, that the preliminary data that was presented the other day on the Apollo 12 site, though, suggests, does not prove, but suggests that there may be nothing unique about the 3.5, either here on Earth or on the moon, that we have other kinds of dates that will show up as we go to different places.
Some of you gentlemen were commenting earlier that that data appears to agree a great deal. But on another level, interpretation of data doesn't seem to agree at all. And I was kind of curious about how you're going to get data so that you can agree on your interpretation. And my question is, from a purely science standpoint, now that you know so much about 11, was the site for 12 a logical place to go and extending that 13, 14, 15, and so forth? I mean, have you changed your views at all about the places to go on the moon?
I've been involved in the site selection to a certain extent. I think you've got to remember that the selection of a site is not just a function of whether it's an ideal place to go from a scientific point of view. It has to be ideal from a number of other points of view. And the total compromise works out to be, in the case of the Apollo 12, it worked out to be so-called Site 7. I think we're finding in the preliminary examination of these that it's an extremely exciting site, just like 11 was. And I think that's going to be the case with every site you go to on the moon, and it's going to be a question of picking the best among some very good places to go. I don't know whether that answers your question or not. The sequence of sites, I think we're going to continually re-examine the sequence of sites and the sites we think are good to go to. But right now, there is a sequence that's based on our understanding of the moon to date. And I'm sure on the basis of this conference and others that there'll be suggestions for changing that, and it'll just be a question of time of working out what is the best scientific and operational compromise for site selection.
If only science were involved in the choice of sites, the choice of sites would have been different even before 11 had been flown. We certainly would have had a flight into the highlands much sooner because that's a conspicuously different and obviously interesting area. We would also want a flight into a crater. We would want a flight into one of the ringed maria that have mass cons underneath them. And it isn't in general being approached in this order.
This is for Frank Press. This probably comes under the heading of geopoetry and speculation and limb crawling and suicide and so on. But you mentioned, if I took it right, that the possibility that the Earth has evolved rapidly enough that it could be at a stage where it's maybe starting to turn a corner or become less active. If that's indeed what you're talking about, Would you care to speculate further as to some kind of geological time frame or a rate or something at which the Earth's internal activity would be declining?
I really just threw that out to excite Harold Urey and somebody else so that, so that the panel would have a more interesting discussion. No, I wouldn't. I do think that that it is interesting, though, that the process by which the radioactive elements are brought toward the Earth's surface is very interesting in the sense that they're most efficient in driving the engine when they're distributed through the Earth. And when you bring them to the surface, where the heat which is generated is released immediately outward, you slow down the whole process. So I think, in this sense, planetary evolution slows down. But I'm talking now on a timescale of billions of years, and I didn't mean to say that the Earth is dying and will be dead tomorrow. Please don't write a headline that says that.
Frank. Frank Ray drew the comparison that the moon was less mature than the Earth, that it was still heating up whereas the Earth was peaking. I'd like to point out that there is also the other possibility that the moon is effectively much more mature, that it heated up and melted and differentiated way back at the beginning, and it's been cooling ever since, and that in studying the moon we're seeing an advanced view of the Earth many years in the future rather than the opposite.
I get the feeling that a number of people at this meeting were sort of surprised to see the size of the contribution to the lunar soil made by carbonaceous chondrites, and that they're more common than anybody had suspected out in space. If that's the case, and if this is primordial matter, is it fair to say that the solar system is still forming?
No, this is not the usual view of the matter. We regard these carbonaceous chondrites as leftovers from the beginning, crumbs and bits that didn't get incorporated into major planets.
Incorporated? If they're now being incorporated, isn't this the tail end of the formation process?
Well, yes, you could look at it that way, yes. But we don't have new planets being nucleated and growing. There's not a continuous source of this material. There's just a little bit of leftovers, that's all.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I didn't mean to imply that the moon appears to be the Earth.
Okay, well, the other side of that coin is that the moon may be as mature as it will ever get.
Why?
The Earth is dying.